welcome to the Round 20, your Supercoach Coach podcast. As was forecasted last week, we are, of course, joined by number one in the comp at the moment, Jay, or Impromptu SCE from the Supercoach Elites, and we're ecstatic to have him on. But we'll start off, as we do every week, by letting you know how we went on the weekend, but after that we'll jump straight in with Jay. So I'll kick us off. I scored 26.99, which incidentally is the exact same score Jay got, but I had it with the Hodge donut. Jacobs was out. That was a bit of a pain. I'm thinking I might have to make a trade this week, because I'm thinking Hodge looks like he's still in doubt from what I'm reading, so I might side swap him to Gazza, who is still scoring like a machine. So that's me for the week. How'd you guys go?
That's unfortunately, you got to use a trade there, Marcus. But I somehow I've scored 26.74 on the weekend, and you have still beaten me. I have no idea how I'm supposed to make
it up.
I just don't know how I'm supposed to catch up this week. This is the most ridiculous week I've ever seen in Supercoach. I know we've had some really low bad weeks before, but five people scored over 3,000 this week. That's just insane. Like, my wife predicted it earlier in the year that it was going to happen, and I laughed at her and told her she was. Then I had to say those dreaded words, honey, I think you were right. Like I said, 26.74 on the weekend. I jumped about 400 spots back into the top 2,000 for the first time in about 10 weeks. Hopefully it's an upward trend. And I just keep going. I did all right with the captain, Pick Pendlebury. First week I jump off Swan and he scores 170. crazy week all around. How'd you go, Faz?
Yep, fortunately I've jumped off the bottom spot that I've been in for the last few weeks with a score of 26.90, so right in the middle of you two. This week. So was that?
Yep. I came last this week, man.
Yep, and by like 20 points only.
Yep.
Awesome.
So yeah, I was very happy with that score, as I'm sure a lot of coaches were this week with their scores. Had Dean Cox as captain, was actually wanting to go with Pendlebury, but I have a rule that I don't pick any captains that are playing against Essendon. So I guess that worked out for the best this week. And, yeah, looking good, I guess. Went up about 2,000 in the rankings to just outside the top 6,000 now. So hopefully I continue coming home with a wet sail and can get a bit more respectable ranking.
Now, we'll jump into Jay season now. So welcome to the show, Jay. And if you'd like to kick us off with how you've gone so far this season. It's been an amazing run.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me to the podcast. And also, just a quick satellite before we start, just to the boys from Supercoach Elite. I scored 26.99 this week. I was fortunate enough not to have a donut, but I had lower instead. So, it was okay. But I think some of the leaders are catching up on me. So, it was an okay week for me.
Do you want to go through a little bit how your season has gone this year? I think you've been in the top 10 for quite a lot of this year, and I know looking at the top 10, I keep expecting it to drop, but it just hasn't happened.
I've been in the top 10 for I think 17 of 19 weeks, and it's been a long journey, and I think after the fourth week I've been in the top 10. The last 5 weeks I've been number one as well. So
wow.
I've faced many different challenges and very strong challenges, and I think on paper most of them, I will say this, most of them have a stronger team than myself on paper, but somehow I think I've been quite lucky with some of my subs, especially Mazanga and Isaac Smith as well. So it has been a long year so far.
That's it's almost unheard of from looking at previous seasons where just to spend so long in that top 10. So well done on that. And it's, as a Supercoach fanatic, that's pretty much every Supercoach's dream to be able to have that experience. So, I'm sure that a lot of our viewers will be envying that position that you've been through this year. I actually want to jump back to start with. I want to jump back to 2010, where you became famous in the Supercoach world for making a really interesting decision with your midfield. I think you had no premiums in your midfield, just all rookies on the field and on the bench, no Ablett, no Swan, no anything like that. Can you explain why you went about that and how that worked out?
Yeah, 2010, the rookie midfield was quite strong. I saw lots of value in the midfield. And if I recall correctly, I actually didn't even pick the first two draft picks. Correct me if I'm wrong. I actually don't remember my the exact midfield, but I'm pretty sure I would not have picked the high-priced rookies. And I saw, like I said, I saw the value in the rookie in the midfield, and I think there was one or two in the back line as well. And I think Ablett was a bit overpriced, and so was Swan for my liking. So I decided to pick an 8 rookie midfield. I finished, if I recall correctly, 788, and I don't think that really justifies how well my team was. And personally, I actually think my 2010 team is actually stronger than my team this year. And that's not being, and hopefully I don't sound arrogant there. It's just I think there's more to gain. And if I had Malcheski, I know there's lots of ifs in Supercoach, yeah, and pods, I feel I would have had a better chance of winning and been this year. And it would have been in my control. Rather this year, it's a bit of luck to me. To me, okay. And that's the reason why I've always said the 2010 was the year I feel I had the best chance of winning, even though I didn't finish so high. 2009, I finished 188, and again, I still don't believe 2009 or 2011 is as good as 2010. So, yes, that's when I became famous or infamous, depending on how you want to view it. To me, it was a waste of a year, and I'm actually quite disappointed myself in that year, and I think pride got the better of me in terms of Malcheski and Pods, and a bit of Rockcliffe, if I recall correctly. But yeah, this year I'm obviously very happy. But yeah, so I think it worked really well last year.
It just shows the gutsy outside of the box sort of thinking that you are well known for, and you have done that a few times this year. Did you take any money into the season, or did you just sort of load up on premiums in the backs and forwards last year? As soon as you didn't spend any in the midfield, did you sort of just reallocate that money to other positions, or did you go in with a war chest at the start?
I know definitely that I used all my money. I had, right, I think, 7027 in terms of premiums. That's why I think if you start having all these rookies, and no premiums, you'll fall behind. And to me, once you fall behind to a certain gap, you can't catch up. It's too hard because of the point of difference near the end. And that's the key. And that's why my indirect strategy this year was that point of difference near the end is much harder than at the start.
So how did your results from last year and the experience you gained from making that different decision, how did that experiment influence how you approached 2011 and your starting team there?
Initially, I was going to try the same strategy, but I think in Supercoach or in life, you need to evolve and adapt to the times. And this year, I looked at the value in the midfield, and I didn't see much value. But what I saw was value in the back line, mainly because of mature age players, Stanley, Lower, and also the MPP Heppel. Those three have kept my back line in good stead. So that's the reason why I adapted slightly. And in hindsight, I think I should have had less midfield premiums. So I think I had 4 this year. I think the optimal amount was 2 and a few MPPs. But Hibbert got me in trouble at the start of the year when he wasn't picked because I think he was injured.
Yeah, it was a difficult one in that first round or so when he was going to get picked because he looked best 22, but then did pick up an injury and it took him a while to get games for the Bombers.
But this year, I think that if you picked Kurnow and Liberatore, which I didn't, you'd be in a good, very good position.
Interesting you bring that up because Marcus didn't have Heppel and didn't have Kurnow at the start, and yet he's top 200 at the moment as well, so even though he missed a couple of those early picks like you did yourself, you still managed to do quite well this year. You didn't start Goddard this year, but then brought him in a little bit later. And in hindsight, that was a masterstroke. What inspired that decision?
A few things, and I was toing and froing all preseason. Before we talk about Goddard, I just want to talk about St Kilda. initially I actually wasn't going to have any St Kilda players. Changed my mind and I had Rewell and Montagna. In hindsight, my initial instinct of not having any St Kilda players would have been the preferred move. However, absolutely, I changed my mind. Now, I didn't choose Goddard because, one, I felt, he was too expensive. Two, I wasn't sure the impact of Goddard from last year's grand final. I know I'm getting a bit outside the square thinking here. Three, the St Kilda schoolgirl. Yeah. The off-field issues. I wasn't sure how that would impact St Kilda Football Club. And four, the bye. The bye was my way out. So it wasn't just a cavalier, risky move not to have him. I had a way out. If Goddard ran riot and scored 150 every game for the first four games, I knew by round six I could get him in. But I also knew that because of his initial starting price, that I wouldn't lose much because even if he scored 150, if the guy's priced at an average of 130-ish, you don't lose much in terms of per dollar. So yeah, that's four reasons why I felt Goddard was a risky move, but it was an acceptable risk which I could manage and actually could get out if it was a bad decision.
It sort of got brought up in conversations that I'd had with people, but the previous year I know people that didn't start with Goddard and they just got burnt and they just fell so far behind from not having him at the start that they couldn't catch up. But it's interesting that you thought that you did have an out, and even if he did get run right, that you would be able to bring him in pretty quickly. And I don't think it's something that occurred to a lot of us, people that I talked to enough, was how much St Kilda might drop off at the start of the year. It's sort of, I mean, if you hadn't have picked Rewald at the start of the year, if you sort of had avoided him and Montagna, then you'd be in an even better position than you're in now.
Yeah, I mean, having said that, I always think about that, you know, why didn't I stick to my initial instinct? I actually publicly mentioned I wouldn't have any St Kilda players, so, and it should be somewhere on the chat forum. But then I think, like I said, the Rewell, you know, he's always been a proven player. Montagna, yeah, you know, he can be really good, as you're aware. And sometimes he can have an off period, but then I changed my strategy just before the season started.
Did you start with any mid prices, or was it just a full gun rookie strategy that you had this year?
I've always been the view that, I've always taken that approach that gun and rookie is the best approach. That's obviously wrong. You can't have a strict rule. Last year, you really needed Malcheski. This year, I think if you had Adcock as your mid-pricer, that was an excellent move, even though now the last few weeks he has dropped. I think Adcock, if he was on my team, he would have been perfect because he'd come in, do his job for the first 10 weeks, give me time to have my other rookies running, give me time to upgrade my other rookies. But this year I actually didn't have any mid-prices except... Actually, I did that when we think of it. I actually had O'Brien and Asbury. To me, they're not mid-price. They're just bad players. and that's another mistake I made as well. But those two would come close to mid-prices. But like I said, they're horrible decisions.
Did you start with Petri?
Actually, you're right. Sorry. Petri is a mid-price, but I...
Yeah.
To me, I categorize him as a premium and underpriced premium, to be honest.
Sure.
And similar
situation to Malcheski last year, really, an underpriced premium.
Yes.
Was that your view preseason, even before, you know, he started scoring well? Was he a definite in the whole preseason?
He was a definite in because of his MPP as well.
Okay.
And also, I value, I'm not sure if I should share this, because maybe next year everyone's going to copy me, but I value people who are captains and vice captains at clubs. And if you look at my initial team, you'll see a lot of captains, all vice captains from clubs. And Petri is the vice captain of North Melbourne. I knew he would get games. He had the MPP. And that's why I had Newman. That's why I had, Boyd. But initially I wanted to have Boyd. But I value captains and vice captains in all sides. In my Supercoach side.
It's an interesting point you make there, because I know Watson has really gone on as a player since he became captain, and I did actually think that that might have happened with Boyd at the start of this year. I thought Boyd might imitate Watson a bit in that way, but I still didn't pick Boyd from the start, so it's interesting to say that. You did mention that you had two relatively dud picks in Astbury and O'Brien. Now, some of our listeners might not even know who those guys are. So you had these two duds, and you didn't start Kerno or Liberatore, who early on, they were really the dominant midfield rookies. How did you overcome this perceived disadvantage that you would have had?
Again, Astbury and O'Brien, shocking decisions. I have to highlight that. I regret that so much. And what's worse about not having Kerno and Liberatore, which is actually quite important, is that they play in different positions. If they played in the same position, it'd only be a waste of two trades, because all you're doing is getting rid of your dud player,
yeah,
and transforming him into a player you missed out. Unfortunately for me, Astbury and O'Brien, which were my MPP link, both bad, forward and back, with whereas Kerno and Liberatore, they're midfields. So I've wasted four trades already. I think it's what's important is, which I've learned this year, which I didn't learn last year, is when you make a mistake, you acknowledge it, fix it, and move on. And that's what I did from a Supercoach point of view, and actually that should actually apply in real life as well, at work as well. You make a mistake, fix it, admit it, move on. Yeah. What I think is important about myself trading Jesse O'Brien and Asbury is that if you make a mistake in picking a player in your initial team, use your two or three trades and correct your correct your error, which I think is important at the start of the year, because if you kept him too long, it's going to impact your team over the year.
This is a good point for those out there, and I know we sort of do advocate using those one or two trades, and I think what we normally advocate is trying to pick those players that you might have missed, but getting rid of the players that you picked that are actually poor is a different way of looking at that as well.
Talking about correction trades, it means that you don't really need two or three accounts, because I think that's a hot topic last week, due to the fact that a few of the top 10 were females. Arguably, it's been suggested that some of them are second account holders. From my point of view is, and I won't go into detail, is that you should only have one account. And obviously, I've only got one account because I kept Astbury and also Brian.
If my wife does get up there, she actually does have a team and loves her Supercoach.
No, that's okay, because I know it's been a hot topic this week, and that's just my personal view. But each to their own anyway. I'm not criticising anyone, but it's just my personal view.
Now, there's a few changes going into this year. I think there's a bit of a scoring change. There was the introduction of the subs. We had four extra trades. We got three bench players. So things were a bit different this year, which made a bit of creative planning in the preseason. The biggest change, though, was probably the buys. What were your thoughts about the buys before the season, and how did you go about planning for them? I know it was a big discussion topic amongst our group of friends.
Initially, I did have concerns, but then if you look at my initial team, I changed my view straight away, and that's when I realised there was three bench players. So I had Newman, Delidio, Swan, Pendlebury, Goods, and Ryan O'Keefe, and I think all of those players are averaging at least 100, even with the bye. So I think initially there was a bit of concern by most super coaches. But then during the year, everyone now have, two players, and it's been suggested three players in the midfield, i.e. Swan, Pendlebury and Thomas. My initial strategy was to avoid having multiple players in the same position, but at the end I just ignored it, to be honest.
I think that's something that's held some of us back this year, is we've probably been too careful of the buys and too worried about what would happen, and it seems like a little bit of a cavalier approach towards them would, in hindsight, has probably been the best way to go.
Definitely, in hindsight, yes.
Not something that we need to consider about next year, thank God.
Yeah.
One thing that's really surprised me looking at your team was that you held on to Joel Selwood through his 4-week suspension. Is that right? And what persuaded you to do that?
One was my limited trades, but two, I think it was my point of difference. People look at point of difference as trading a player who they're trying to make a point of difference against, name, which is usually the overall leader. For myself, I knew that everyone would try to make a point of difference against me or try to trade Selwood out, because his 4 weeks is actually a very long time. But I thought to myself, well, I'm actually creating a point of difference by holding on to Selwood. More importantly, I looked at his draw. When he came back, I knew he had, let me try to work it out, Lions, Demons, Gold Coast, I think there's two more, of Adelaide and another team, but I knew they were all weak teams. So it was the three factors, point of difference, the team he was playing against, and I knew he'd be hungry to repay the Cats. So I made him captain. I know the week he came back and he scored 80 something. So I guess my theory wasn't that correct, but he did score 150 on the weekend. But it was mainly his draw as well. He had a good draw.
I've been burned a little bit by Selwood myself this year, having traded him in because of an injury, and then he got the 4 weeks, and then I traded him out, and now I just I always knew he was going to score well, and so it's been quite a frustrating experience that I've personally had with him. It's interesting that you took the. Because you would think that trading Selwood out would be the aggressive approach. And I think a lot of people that were in the top 10 or so would be like, okay, I've got to be aggressive. I've got to get him out and I've got to have another premium come in straight away. Otherwise, I'm going to lose my spot. So I think it's quite interesting you didn't go with that mentality when I think a lot of your opposition would have done that.
Yeah, I think if you went Selwood to Bartel, and last week he played well, but I think a few weeks ago he didn't play that well.
So, I think he got a 4 in there when he got injured as well.
Yeah, so and I've read others who've traded players where there was actually no gain in terms of the trade itself, and Selwood's back, which makes it worse for them because he's actually the point of difference. To me, Del Santo's in great form. Selwood is just below Del Santo in terms of potential scoring. Hopefully Selwood can repay me and the Geelong Football Club in the next 2 weeks by scoring 150.
Okay, so continuing on with the theory about the buys, we did ask people to send in questions and we appreciate all the feedback on the forums and on Twitter about that during the week. Mahjong asked a question. You have Scotland, Gibbs, Judd and Cruiser. Carlton have a buy in a few weeks. Do you have any thoughts about that round and what you plan on doing, or do you want to keep that to yourself?
I'm happy to talk, discuss it. I'm at the stage where... where I think most of my strategy is in open market, whilst not all of the information is given to the open market. But I know that all of the top 10 or top 20, or actually most teams, would have at least a Judd or Murphy in the middle,
yep.
And at least a Gibbs. Okay, so in terms of really one difference, extra. It's actually two extra, and right. Some will have Scotland as well. And I know I think. Team 2 and Team 3 have Scotland as well. So, to me, Cruiser is the only concern I have. But I do have an extra forward player. So, all I do is move Petrie to the forward. So I'll lose one or two players in terms of having rookies starting. But I've been having Stanley and Heppel and Lowell starting for the last four or five weeks anyway. So, to me... if I haven't used my trades by then, I will definitely use it that week.
I'm just wondering about Scotland. Scotland, a player that interests me, that he's that extra person you've added. When did you bring him in?
He's been fantastic for me, to be honest. He's been in for about, I think, 6 or 7 weeks. He's the which I was initially reluctant to have, but then I thought to myself, look, I have Newman. Newman, Delidio, even though there's an extra Judd in the middle. But then I said, everyone's in the same situation anyway. And now because of all the injuries in the back line, everyone's forced to bring Scotland anyway. If they don't bring him in, they're going to lose out.
Right. His scoring has been quite exceptional this year. He's been really consistent and just pumping out those big scores all year. What did you end up doing with Newman last week?
I traded Newman for Fisher. I was very reluctant, to be honest. Newman's been a very good player for myself, and was unfortunate because he got injured in the first 10 minutes, but he was kind enough to keep scoring while he was on the bench.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So that was very nice of him. I think he scored like 14 points. So thank you, Chris Newman. I think he is out for a few weeks as well. So I had no choice. So I'm happy with my choice of Fisher as well.
I think he sort of cancels out. Bringing Fisher in, I think that cancels out an advantage that some of the other teams might have had over you, the fact that you didn't have Fisher. So that might actually work for you.
Yeah, so indirectly it was a perfect week for him. Well, I wouldn't say it's perfect for anyone to get injured, but from a super coach point of view, it was perfect because it forced me to go to Fisher. Ideally, Newman would have got injured in the fourth quarter from a super coach point of view only, of course. So, so he's been good. So I actually went on to the Richmond team board and said, thanks, Chris Newman, for your services, and I'm not annoyed at you. So, yeah.
I don't think Newman's got a Twitter, so you can't thank him through that. Even though you're number one at the moment and have been for five exceptional weeks in a row, there would have been some decisions that you could improve, that you could have improved on. Are there any that really stand out that you really wish you had have changed, other than the Asprey and O'Brien?
Cruiser? That's still open to discussion in terms of whether it was a good move or a bad trade. One, it hurt because I've got an extra Callum player. Two, because he scored 150, and then since then he hasn't been scoring 150 at all. He's been scoring sub 100. I won't go into detail because there's a debate on whether I should have done Griffin to Cruiser, but I think that Sandilands being injured, you can't predict that. You can't predict a player coming back. We've got qualified doctors and health people in for each club assessing him. So he came back, got injured. So in hindsight, if I kept Griffin, who coincidentally enough, a week later scored 160, which is really a slap in the face, I still maintain my decision, even though the outcome was poor. Sipos is definitely my bad trade. He gained me a measly, I think, 80,000 or 100,000. Got him in, realised he's getting nowhere, he's getting no games, so got rid of him. That would definitely be my bad trade.
I think with the extra trades and the extra bench player, there's a little bit more room to make a mistake like that this year, whereas in last year's you maybe would have got punished a little bit more for bringing in a player that didn't work out so well. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that? I
definitely agree on that. And that's a good observation because with the initial team and also with the trades I've made, I haven't made the best trades all year. Do you know what I mean? But I think what I've gained this year, and again, I'm not sure if I should tell everyone, but look, what's the point of hiding it? I think this year it was important that everyone jumped the gun. Do you know what I mean? If you held back and saved your trades, I feel there was a bit of a disadvantage because some of my trades haven't been good. My initial team wasn't that great, but what I gained was that I traded fast. I traded around possibly some bad trades around premiums, so around the buys. But I think my strategy this year was to attack, and trade, slow down, and hopefully you're in the top 10, top 100, or top 1,000. And I think it's worked well.
Okay. So you mentioned your worst trade being Sipos in. In hindsight, what's been your best trade this year?
This is going to be a strange answer, but I think Jack Brewell in was actually a very good trade, and I think most of the listeners may be thinking impromptu, are you a bit lost? But
I
think
traded him in, mate, and I hated it from the start, so I'd love to hear your reasoning.
Because he came in at the right time. He came in the week where he, I think, he got injured, dropped his value, and I think it was up to 300,000. It was the week I needed him to come in, and then he had a really soft draw. I think he had five easy rounds. Okay, yep. So then the key is having a play you don't have to focus on for 5 weeks while you're focusing on other players. But you still need that play to keep scoring hundreds, or all 90s while you're fixing your team. And this year, you had the benefit of having more trades. So he's come in, done his job, six or seven weeks or 5 weeks. I got rid of him the week he did bad, and whilst the argument could be, well, I've wasted two trades, yes, I have, but to me, I've actually allowed more time from other players to develop, and also I've actually gained some cash on Jack Rewall. So the way you can look at it is in two ways. You can say, well, he's been horrible. But the key is getting a player in and getting out. Every player you trade in has a purpose. Some do it to get a premium. Some do it to generate quick cash. And his job was to generate cash, but also to have someone who would score hundreds for 6 weeks while I could focus on other players. And this year, it worked. Next year, I wouldn't do the same thing with Jack Rewall.
You are renowned for thinking outside the box, and there's an example right there. We've been around the big footy community for a number of years now, and I know that you were there sort of in its heyday. You are a regular forum poster. How do you think forum participation has influenced your team, and what advantages have you gained in Supercoach knowledge from participating in forums over the course of the years?
I think forums are very important for most people who want to have a high overall result. It's an information sharing area which you can use, but for me it doesn't actually influence my way of thinking anyway. And my benefit is, even if I give advice, most people don't listen anyway, because it's so out there that the people think I'm trying to make their team worse. so for me there's actually no disadvantage at all, even though some people believe that if I share too much information, that I could lose out at the end, which if I do, I actually don't believe it's me providing the information which is resulting in me not winning the overall. It's because of my bad trades or because other players have picked a better team. Other players who rely on footy forums too much, I think that there's already a disadvantage there. You should be able to use the forum, but then adapt to your team. I don't believe there's any this disadvantage for my team, to be honest.
I noticed that your team has a lot of links set up for MPP or dual position players. How have you used this to your advantage this year?
In relation to MPPs, I think that's the reason why I kept Salwood, to be honest. I had Isaac Smith, Mazunga, and also Heppel. I've got MPP links everywhere. Rucks with forwards, two forward midfield links, and also one back link. So I've linked everywhere, and I think this year you can be bold with your trading simply for that reason. But more importantly, you got MPP links are useless if you have guys like Asprey and O'Brien. That was apparently my perfect link, which we find out that it wasn't that good. MPP links are perfect this year because you have good players: Heppel, Hibbard, Jacobs, Mazunga, Isaac, Smith, Petrie. So you've got all these links, and I've used it to my advantage, I feel, and I've kept players for a long time, even though I felt I should have traded him out, and Salwood is a perfect example. So very important this year.
We've sort of touched on this a little bit. Do you think that this year has been more suited to an aggressive approach to trading, and at what point in the season did you identify that?
I actually thought of, at the start of the year, I was going to trade hard either way, but having Kurnow and Libertore doing well, and also Asprey and O'Brien doing bad, it was actually something I wanted to do. Ideally, it would have been to upgrade or to trade around the buys. But for this year, I had to do it because of my initial team. It wasn't that good, to be honest.
It may surprise a lot of the listeners out there that you actually have Carmichael Hunt in your team, and he is still there. Has he ever actually played a game on your field? And I wonder if that's proof that three bench spots is too many.
No. No, Carmichael hasn't played on the field. Last week, he nearly got his first game for me, but then I traded Newman to Fisher. If I didn't trade Newman to Fisher, I think he would have been in an emergency and may have got his first game. That's another, I think, bad initial player I've had. And I think this year, three players on the bench with 24 trades, I think it's a bit too much. And also because of the way the buy was organised with Gold Coast, you don't count Gold Coast's first buy because you have the opportunity to change your team initially. So you plan your team already, and then by then, after round nine, there's no more concerned over Gold Coast. So I think this year, three in the bench is more than enough. To me, possibly 20 trades and three in the bench would have been ideal, or 24 trades and two in the bench.
Right, and I think it has been pretty much confirmed that we will be going back to 20 trades and two on the bench next year, which will be back to the old days. Final question from me is, who do you think your biggest rival is in the current top 10?
I think number two is. But the thing is, the last few weeks I've had different different leaders, and I think Wood is Good was quite strong, if I recall correctly. Joshua's team, who's currently third, he's quite strong. To me, the guys who've been in the top 10 for a while, I think there's actually a slight advantage, not in terms of team, but in terms of handling the pressure. And I know people might not think there's not actually pressure, but there's actually some pressure being in the top 10 for a long time as well. But I'd say on paper, Team 2 is quite strong. So I guess he or she would be the rival. I haven't checked the coach's first name.
That's Don't Do Think, and his name's Dan. Dan. Who scored 28-42 on the weekend, which is insane.
And I think he got a donut as well.
Oh, wow.
So. He's got Hodge in his team. So what's funny is, like, you generally know, without even looking, you generally know who's in your opponent's team. Just the point of differences, not the whole team, just the point of differences. And I'm pretty sure, like, last week I knew the top, sorry, two out of two, three, and four all had Hodge. So so I'd say the number two right now is actually a very strong contender.
I was interested in your 2010 team due to the fact that you stacked your midfield with a lot of rookies, that therefore you ended up with a lot of premiums in your back and forward lines. And I know that a lot of super coaches tend to avoid that. I know I certainly do, that I tend to steer clear from starting a lot of forward premiums, and my team, therefore, the structure's set up around that. But you seem quite, you know, willing to go and start with a stack of forward premiums. You seem to have a bit more faith in them.
There's two ways you can get value in a player. To me, having forwards or backs, if you get value for them, or if you lose value or pricing in a premium, but you gain on a rookie who you're confident with, that it negates each other. So, for example, if, you know, I think Hodge was in the back line last year. If he dropped in price, I'm not sure if actually last year or the year before, whoever's in the back line, if they drop by 50,000, but you have a better rookie in the midfield, okay, that to me negates any drop in value. To me, some people look at the premiums, looking for value in premiums. To look for a player who's 400,000 who will get to 500,000. That's a good approach. But you can look on the other side of the coin, is why not look for value in a rookie? So to me, whilst it is a risky approach having seven premium backmans and seven forwards, and there's a high chance you'll be losing lots of value, especially forwards and backs, the midfield tend to maintain their value. But the backs and the forwards, you know, come and go, especially when you have Goods or Ryan O'Keefe, they generally drop. But Goods traditionally drops in value at the start of the year and then gains back at the end of the year. And ideally, you'd not have Goods at the start of the year, and you wait until he drops, and then you gain on the value of of him increasing. So you gain when you buy low, and then he comes back higher. But to me, I also look at the rookies themselves.
Sure. And I think that's a lesson I myself have learnt this year. And it's a pretty good one to go with, that I structured my side very tightly based on not wanting to cop Ford premiums dropping and wanting to leave them as easy sideways upgrades. But because of that, I did lose out on, you know, somebody like Heppel, who I knew was a big forfeit, and I think it's cost me a fair amount by not having him. What I want to mention is I noticed that, you know, you did mention you made some bad moves along the way, that it seems to me that there's a lot of opportunity, you know, to get things right, and that's a very key thing to a lot of people in the start of the year are looking for points of difference, but yet that this year, for example, like Stefan Martin has gone largely unnoticed, but he, you know, I think he has 30,000 selections, but he's averaging like 95 or something and started at a rookie price and played most of the year. Adcock is one that a lot of people missed out on. Steve Johnson over Ciro Rioli was a lot that people missed out on. Stuff like that, that it seems to me that you got a lot right in terms of the selection of Ryan O'Keefe, which I think has been absolutely critical. Chris Newman has been an absolute star for his starting price. That you've got a lot right. Not starting Goddard, that even though you've made those mistakes, that they've put you far enough ahead to keep you in contention.
Mm-hmm. And you're right, Stefan Martin, he's doing very well. And I know because one of the top 10 has him. I think by last week, after the Pies gave the Demons a bit of a lesson, he only got 40-something points.
Yep.
But I've noticed him, and you know, anyone who's picked him from the start, well done. I wish I picked him, to be honest. But I'm still happy with my Stanley, Lower, and also Heppel. But yeah, I have been fortunate with some of my selection, and I think Swan and Penbury were the two, and I think having Goods and Ryan O'Keefe together, it was good because not many would pick them together.
Yeah.
And that was the benefit. So I knew I had one or the other, and whilst sometimes, you know, ideally you want both to do well, you know you're covered at least one player with most teams.
And I might just jump in there quickly, Jay. I don't think we've covered it yet, but who do you actually support in the AFL, and has that had any influence on you picking your team? Because I know I'm an Essendon supporter, and I have to sort of make sure I think twice before picking any Essendon players because I have a tendency to overrate them in terms of their Supercoach abilities.
I'm also an Essendon supporter. This year it was much easier because of the Essendon bye, round 24. So that made my decision much easier. Of course, the argument could be, well, you know, having them, every team has two buys, so it shouldn't really impact your decision. But my view is that round 24, it's a forced trade. You have to trade. So there's a slight difference. Bang for Essendon, it's because I love the team, I've learned to accept the losses. So I don't rate Essendon anymore. I love the team and I support them, but if they make the finals, I'm happy because I used to really get upset when Essendon lost, but now I've learned to be more calm but I haven't picked any Essendon players unless they're rookies. So it'd be Hibbert if I had to pick someone, which I had. He was in my initial team, and Heppel as well, just the rookies.
All right, I think we might wrap it up, Jay. But thanks very much for coming on the show, and thanks so much for all your insight. You certainly shared a lot, and I'm sure the audience will really appreciate it and try to apply it moving forward and into the future. And best of luck for the remainder of the season, and we certainly hope that you get the 50K win, even though you're from the SCE and we have a bit of friendly rivalry going. We certainly hope that you come home strong and take out the prize. You've done very well this year.
Thanks, boys, and yeah, it's a great show you guys have, and thanks for inviting me.
No worries. I know I'm definitely jumping on the impromptu bandwagon for the last 5 weeks, so bring it home, mate.
Excuse me. Just give me a sec, guys.
No worries.
We're going to be known as the people that killed impromptu.